Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for the month of September. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. It seems like summer is just about ended here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The leaves have been falling in the eastern part of the state for the last 2 weeks, and it looks like fall is just about here. But then again, it's New England, and you never quite know. We could have some more warm weather. This month, we'll be talking to Susan Glass about this year's Beatty Contest. We'll hear from Christine Chaikin of Insightful Publications about an interesting resource for Massachusetts. But we'll begin, as always, with BSCB President Brian Charlson. Good evening, Brian. Welcome to Council Connection for the month of September.
Yeah, Council Connection. You know, it seems like a month doesn't last as long as it used to, Steve.
Boy, isn't that the truth. I thought at the beginning of August, well, you know, I've got too much to worry about. Summer's not completely done, but I've got some time. And then all of a sudden, it was the middle of August, and it was the end of August, and now we're into September, and I'm already seeing the middle of September, and I'm going, I don't know what's going on here, but man, it's just going by way too fast.
It goes by very, very fast. You know, this has been such a year of strange weather conditions that we're all, of course, naturally concerned about our friends and family and countrymen down in Texas.
Absolutely.
And dealing with that whole hurricane situation.
Yep.
And now we're gearing up. They say this weekend we're going to be seeing a similar kind of thing, if maybe even worse, in Florida.
Yep.
Keep in mind, Florida is a lot flatter than Texas.
Yes, yes.
And Florida's got the Keys. They've already started evacuating the Florida Keys,
yeah.
Mandatory evacuation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we have our friends out on the West Coast. I was speaking with family earlier today from Oregon, and it's all about forest fires in that neck of the woods.
Yep.
Pardon the pun.
And California earlier this week had an unbelievable heat wave. Temperatures in the San Francisco area were over 100 degrees.
That is so hard to believe. I've been to San Francisco a number of times.
Yes.
And in fact, one trip, I got both a cold and a sunburn the same day. I mean, that's San Francisco.
That's right. And 63 degrees in 1 minute and 80 the next. And you just don't know where to land. But 106 or 100 plus, that's...
That's just inconceivable.
That's right. I mean, that's tough anywhere, but, when you're not used to it, it's even worse. Anyway.
So time is flying. It's reflected by changes in the weather. And I'm very much thinking about dates and things this time around. We have our one-day fall conference of the Bay State Council of Blind coming up on November 4th. It's our typical one-day conference. The committee is getting together for a conference call to start hammering out subjects and those kinds of things. And I think a few of them I could tell you that are going to be in there will include an update on how the Mass Commission for the Blind is doing in terms of its funding.
Mm-hmm.
It's undergoing a federal audit, which is something that's done on a regular basis to these agencies from around the country.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be some information to report from there, I'm sure, because it is being held at the Carroll Center. I'm sure that Greg Donnelly, president of Carroll Center, will speak for a few minutes. Our good friend Carl Richardson over at the State House is working on getting us an appropriate legislator to mm-hmm. come speak to us about how things are working or not working at the State House.
Okay.
And then, of course, there's supposed to be the informative and fun topics.
Right.
There will be a panel of three AIRA users. That's A-I-R-A, AIRA. This is the Google Glass with the little transmitter and your iPhone and that kind of thing. So Carl Richardson, Joe Yee, and myself, all three AIRA users, will be in a panel presentation. And it looks as if I might even be able to get the head of marketing of that service to come because he happens to be a resident of Boston.
Oh, that's...
How that one goes.
Yeah, yeah.
We try to take advantage of whatever space we're in, and there's a couple of things under consideration. One is, this summer, a Eagle Scout had as his Eagle Scout project building a bocce ball court. So if we get it, if the weather holds out, we'll be out there throwing the green balls, the white balls, and the red balls.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll learn.
Yeah.
And then I expect that we will also do something, taking advantage of the fact that there are a number of Bluetooth beacons around the Carroll Center.
Oh, really? Okay.
That are an example of the same kind of beacon system used in North Station.
Ah.
So we're expecting to have the person who's running that whole test project, I believe it's out of UMass Amherst, to come and actually be able to demo a bit of what makes Bluetooth beacons a possibility.
Oh, great.
I have to say, I haven't been very impressed with them at the national convention. Did you use those at all yourself?
I keep thinking about it, but every time I've been there, I've just heard about how things didn't work and kind of worked very strangely and said, you know what, I think I'll just wait. And truthfully, at the point when I got to the convention, they kind of were completely off my radar because I had not heard anything that indicated to me that I should be excited enough to try them.
Yeah,
but
we'll have to see.
For
me, since they've got them already on the Carroll Center campus, we'll have a chance to take a look at that
sure.
technology. So those are a couple of the techie ones.
Okay.
A couple of the non-technical, I did say bocce ball. That's not technical.
No.
But we'll be looking at some opportunities to deal with our health and eating.
Okay.
It looks like we're going to have somebody come and talk to us a bit about nutrition. And I'm trying to convince the committee to let me do a little cooking class. As you know, I've done a few of those over
yes,
the years.
Yes, I've attended
and
a couple of those.
Bring in my new Instant Pot.
Okay.
For pressure cooking and the like.
Sure.
And my air fryer,
mm-hmm.
so you can get fried food to taste without using oil.
Okay.
So a little bit of a healthy twist on that, a little cooking coming down. But there'll be lots of other things we'll be considering.
Yep.
So I'm excited about that. Again, that's November 4 at the Carroll Center. And registration material will be going, save the date. And those kind of things will be going out shortly.
Right.
And the other thing that deals with dates and base date was a pretty radical reversal. You were on the board call the other night.
Yes, I was.
As a result of some conflicts with hotel dates, the Bay State Council, instead of holding its annual multi-day convention in the early spring, as has been the case for a number of years, we're doing a flip-flop, and we've moved the dates of that conference to the weekend of September 21 in 2018.
Yes.
So partly that was because the only date available in the neck of the woods that we were dealing with was Easter weekend. And I don't know about you, Steve, but I might have been a no-show for a conference held on Easter weekend.
Yeah, and I guess even if I wasn't, even if I was planning to be there, there would probably be a number of people who wouldn't. And so it would probably have not have been a popular idea among our members.
And I think it would have been hard to get good
speakers and
through
a lot
that
of that
weekend
kind of thing
as well.
So. Oh, yeah.
So nonetheless, we're doing a flip-flop, and we'll do it in the fall instead of in the spring.
Yep.
That should also eliminate any chance of significant weather conditions.
Well, that's true.
Which a spring one, you never know. I mean, it sometimes snows.
Yeah.
Into that early spring time.
Yeah, and I don't think we'll have any snow in September.
I think not. I think not. So those are a couple of important dates for Bay State Council.
Okay.
Other things that we're involved with, of course, we continue to work with Mass Eye and Ear to improve accessibility for people with vision loss over there. You would think that a hospital that had the word eye in its name would have been one of the exemplary entities when it comes to dealing with vision-impaired patients, et cetera. But that hasn't been the case. But we are involved in a very successful series of upgrades of things like their website and staff training and access to all those medical documents and the like. So that's moving ahead pretty well. We're 1 year. We're going to get an annual report from the hospital in the next couple of weeks when that committee gets together. That's kind of important.
Of course.
And I think probably a couple of things that I'm the most excited about is the board voted in a new BSCB chapter, specifically the Greater Boston Area chapter.
Okay.
They haven't officially named themselves as of yet, but they did hold a meeting to see if there was sufficient interest, and there more than certainly were enough people to pull together a chapter.
Yep.
And that I'm seeing a lot of names now on the list that weren't able to attend that first formulative meeting. So I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's going on, a similar effort is underway. They're going to be holding their, if you will, little constitutional convention, putting together the constitution and electing their first president and other board members for the chapter.
Well, that's right, because one of the things
that... Wonderful city of Worcester.
Oh, okay. And I think both chapters have to submit their constitution to the board for approval.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the paperwork part is still in process.
Yeah.
You have to get dues from at least seven individuals with
That's
their
right.
contact information.
Yep.
You have to submit a constitution and bylaws and list of elected officers.
Yep.
But it's always difficult when it comes to forming new chapters. What it, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Right.
So they're both working well in that regard.
Good.
Our guide dog using chapter on September 9 will be holding an event over at the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library.
Okay.
It's a puppy party.
Oh.
They're going to have a number of puppy raisers come with their wannabe guide dogs in tow, and there'll be a bit of a potluck that goes along with that. So again, that's September 9 over at the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library at 141 Riverside Street. That's the back gate to Perkins. So just a few things there, Steve. What do you think?
I think it's going to be an exciting fall for Bay State and actually an exciting year. It sounds to me like we've got a lot in the wings, as it were, and a lot of potential for interest among our members and things to do, places to go, people to see.
All of the above.
So I think we're off to a rollicking good start, as the British might say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have, of course, many ways for people to hear about these things. There's the Council Connection, of course. There's also the Bay Lines three times a year magazine that comes out under the editorship of Bob Hache,
right,
and Bay Lines Express, the e-newsletter that comes out once a month under the editorship of David Kingsbury.
Yep.
You can also get some information, though it's a little harder at this point to really point at a specific thing, but you can go to our website and subscribe to our Twitter feed, and you can also subscribe to our announcement lists and chat lists and those kinds of things.
That's right.
So if you're that computer user, then that's a great way to go to it. You just go to the website, which is, Mr. Webmaster?
www.acbofma.org.
And there you'll find ways to click and subscribe to those lists.
Right.
And they can be quite interesting. You know, some of the things that students are going through right now in dealing with things such as the Common Application, our legislative committee is involved in that. It's a, I don't know, when you went to college, you had to fill out an application for each one you wanted to be considered by, didn't you, Steve?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And nowadays, a number of colleges, when I say a number, I mean hundreds of them, use the same application process.
Oh.
So the legislative committee is working on assuring that that becomes accessible, because as of this moment, it is not.
Of course not.
And then, of course, I saw a piece today out of the ACB National Office by the young lady who's a ACB scholarship winner who is attending Dartmouth, who has filed a suit against her college for lack of accommodation to her disability. She's a competitive skier and horsewoman.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently she feels like they haven't provided her access to textbooks and assistance in taking tests in a way that they committed to her in advance. So we are watching those things as well. We have a very active ACB students chapter. President there is Daisy Russell.
That's right.
So there's just many, many ways to become involved and benefit from your association with the Bay State Council of the Blind. We invite you to come along. Yep. Enjoy some of the things we accomplished, but also, put your shoulder to the wheel with us and we can accomplish a great deal more.
That's right. Well, thank you, Brian, for bringing us up to date and up to speed on all the happenings with Bay State. And I look forward to doing it again next month.
Always something new. We'll
yes,
again
there
talk
is.
To you all next time around on Council Connection.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit www.acbofma.org and look for the Council Connection. If you listened to this year's national convention, you heard a lot about audio description and about a contest held by the Audio Description Project. Here's Susan Glass to tell us more. So, Susan, tell us a little bit about BAYDI, and maybe for those of our listeners who do not know what it is, and maybe even for those who do know what it is, give us a bit of background and a little bit of a recap on things.
Sure. BAYDI stands for the Benefits of Audio Description in Education, and it is a writing contest for young people ages 7 to 21. What you do to become a BAYDI contest entrant and potential winner is you watch an audio-described film, and you write a review of that film, but you're not just reviewing the film. You are reviewing the quality of the audio description and the ways in which it enhanced your experience of listening to that video or film, or maybe detracted. And oftentimes it can be a mixed bag, and your review can be anywhere from 300 to 500 words in length. And, of course, how long it is depends on the film you're watching and depends upon your age and a number of other situations. The BAYDI contest has been around for 9 years now, but in the last year and a half, it's taken a high profile. It is co-sponsored annually by the American Council of the Blind's Audio Description Project, ACB-ADP, and the Description Captioned Media Program, or DCMP. The mission of the American Council of the Blind's Audio Description Project is to promote and advocate for the use of high-quality audio description in television, movies, performing arts, museums, educational materials, and other venues where the presentation of visual media is critical to the understanding and appreciation of content. ADP's goals are to sponsor a broad range of activities designed to build awareness of audio description among the general public, as well as its principal users, people who are blind and low vision. And of those activities that the ADP sponsors, the BAYDI contest is just one. And I would invite anyone who has not experienced what the ADP has to offer to launch your web browser and visit the ADP website at www.acb.org/ADP. There you can find definitions of audio description. You can find samples of audio-described art and films. You can find listings of current DVDs and television programs that are audio described, and these are updated all of the time, like every week or every 2 weeks. Blu-ray, you know, discs. You can find lists of the many audio description committees that ACB has, and you can find archived conferences. We have been sponsoring audio description conferences 2015, 16, and 17. 2014? My memory's failing me, but there's a lot of archive materials up there and really good listening, so it's a good playground. If a student would like to purchase an audio-described video that's not necessarily from the DCMP website or educational in nature, you can do that at the audio description website. It's just a little bit change in the address. You're going to type www.acb.org/ADP/DVDs.html, and once you've done that, you'll get a listing of videos that are actually available to you.
Perfect. And it is accessible, too, because I've been to the site, and it's a breeze to navigate. Everything reads like it's supposed to. Things are clearly marked so that you can find them, and that's not always the case. Even among things that are supposed to be accessible, they often are not. But
amen to that. And the person who's made that possible is Mr. Fred Brack.
Yes.
He has spent just hours and hours and hours. He's a describer in Raleigh. I never get it right.
North Carolina.
Yep. North Carolina. Didn't study my geography, did I? Anyhow, he is a describer in that area, and his wife is blind, and he has been working on our website for years and years and just continues to make it better all the time, loves feedback. So anyway, that's one place to go, certainly.
Okay.
So that's half the partnership for the Beatty Contest. The other half is the Description Caption Media Program, DCMP, and its mission is a little bit different. In contrast to being a general purveyor of media, the DCMP's ultimate goal is for accessible media to be an integral tool in the teaching and learning process for all stakeholders in the educational community, including students, educators, and other school personnel, parents, service providers, businesses, and agencies. And DCMP started out, the main goal was to provide captioned support for students with hearing impairments. And then they grew through the years, and under the wonderful leadership of Mr. Jason Stark, they advanced and began to incorporate audio description as well. And if you go to the DCMP website, you can find articles on education, articles on how audio description and captioning improve the acquisition of language learning, make people better listeners, help students who are English as second language pupils, all of that kind of thing. What's really cool about DCMP, and this is why it's such a treasure for our Beatty Contest, is that the website has more than 6,000 titles of educational videos. So remember when you were a kid in school and you watched some movie about molecules or, you know, Honduras or, you know, just think back to all the films. Remember the old film projectors and the film would break and stuff?
Yep, absolutely.
Well, we don't have to do that anymore, but you have all these educational videos, and they are audio described. And if you register at the DCMP site as a teacher or a school, they become absolutely free to you and for download and use in your school. And so it's a combination of these two agencies and organizations together that make the contest possible.
And I suppose we should mention at this point that this year's winner of the contest was from California, I believe, right?
Yes, she is. She's Miss Abigail Moreno, although she prefers to be called Abby.
Okay.
She's from Lowell High School in San Francisco, California. And she was the grand prize winner of this year's contest for her essay that she wrote reviewing the audio-described film Faith, and this was actually a film that she found on the ACB website. Faith tells the story of a blind woman who aspires to and becomes a professional musician, and it's her story. And a highlight was that Abby attended the ACB National Convention in Reno this year with her parents and one of her teachers of the visually impaired, and she actually read her essay to the entire ACB General Session on Wednesday morning, July 5th.
And it just so happens that we have a clip of that, and let's listen to it right now.
Are people with visual impairments getting their money's worth when it comes to watching blockbuster movies and trendy videos online? This is a very important question that, quite frankly, has been avoided for far too long. In today's day and age, where technology fulfills such a major role in all of our lives, everyone longs for the ability to interact equally, despite individual differences. And for members of the blind community, this kind of equality just might be found through audio description. In Faith, My Story About Being Confident, a short film that can be found on the American Council for the Blind's website, tells the sweet and encouraging story of a young girl who enters a songwriting contest and overcomes her stage fright when she wins. This particular video, among thousands of others, is audio described from beginning to end. Through my observations on this film, I am able to say that most of my feedback is positive, which I must admit took me by surprise. One particular aspect of this film that I had initially worried about was whether or not the description would interfere with the voices of the featured individuals. My experience in the past with voice-adapted videos has always failed to meet my expectations on this important detail. Yet, the description of this video impressed me on a few unexpected levels. For one, I highly applaud the fact that common visuals, such as the credits at the end, are read aloud, and even a detail as small as a light bulb being shown in the background are verbally explained, as well as the descriptive voice speaking with smooth clarity, outstanding details, and neat precision. Additionally, no matter how many times I went back to listen to this video clip, I really could not find any time where the voices of the individuals and that of the audio description clashed with one another. Therefore, I highly applaud this short film on these audio-described highlights. Despite the positives this film has to offer for visually impaired viewers, there is some negative feedback I feel obliged to share. My one criticism would be that the voice on this audio-described video is a bit on the robotic side. Yes, this is common for most audio-described videos. However, I think it would be a more natural and appealing approach if a standard human voice, if you will, were used instead. Obviously, this may take more money, technological training, and time, but could definitely be worthwhile. Speaking from my own experience with audio-described films and having not been much of a fan for most of my life, I feel this adjustment would make the optional service more inviting overall. As a whole, I learned that not all audio-described videos and films are the same, and with a few adjustments here and there, the adaptation can actually be quite enjoyable. I feel that making audio description available for blind people should be taken seriously and be put into effect globally so that all can enjoy the big screen luxuries that life has to offer. Personally, I'll definitely be thinking twice about using audio description the next time I sit down and relax with a blockbuster classic and a buttery bucket of popcorn. Thank you.
What an excellent essay.
Yeah, yeah. And what an excellent, what a poised young woman. I mean, you know yourself, if you've spoken in front of General Session, if you've done it for years, you still get the jitters. You know, there's
absolutely
all these people. And the room was freezing cold, and she was in a beautiful dress, and she, you know, you couldn't hear her teeth shattering. She really handled it beautifully.
Well, she was probably frozen in place, you know. I mean, it's I mean, it's kind of hard not to be, but yes.
I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
She also attended the audio description seminars on Tuesday afternoon of the same week and talked about how audio description became a part of her life and charmed everybody in that room, too. And obviously, her family were so proud of her. And she had been a winner of a San Francisco academic scholarship. She has a very interesting life story, which we can save that for another time, but she's made a lot of journeys. She was not always blind, and when she became blind, she just dug in and made it work. And she's a really, 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 really neat woman.
You really have to admire people that do that. I mean, we often tend to hear the other kinds of stories of people who just kind of fold up their tents and go home once they realize that their vision is going away. But there are also an awful lot of people who just do what Abby did and make a success out of their lives and just keep on trucking. And, it's an important thing for all of us to remember that and take inspiration from it.
It is. Her first TVI was when Abby became blind at the age of six, would come to her house and teach her Braille. And Ellie said, that's the TVI. She'd be getting ready to go home, and she'd turn to say goodbye to Abby, and Abby was still typing away and reading away. Goodbye, Miss Ellie. She just kept working.
Well, that's dedication and persistence.
Absolutely. Naturally, we want to celebrate young people and audio description more every year. We did have other winners, and we won't go through all that now because we did it in a previous broadcast, but we had first and second and third place winners, and we have prizes for those students and their TVIs as well.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'd like to do at this time is share information about how listeners can enter the contest themselves if they are young people.
By all means.
Or if they are teachers of the visually impaired and they would like to encourage their own students to enter, or if they know teachers of the visually impaired and would like to encourage those students to enter. Let me just give you a little rundown of what's going on this year. So our contest launches on September 11th, and between September 11th and December 1st, students have the opportunity to enter the contest, and this is how they need to do that. The first thing they need to do is to go to the DCMP website and set up a free account. And you need to go to the website even if you're not going to use an educational video from the DCMP website. And the reason is that the DCMP website is our entry portal for the contest.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you decided that you weren't going to watch an educational video, but you wanted to, review Winged Migration or another film that you knew, you would still want to sign up at the website. And
right.
You do that by going to the following address, www.dcmp.org/signup, SIGNUP.
Let's talk about some of the categories for those wishing to enter the contest. So we...
All right. So we have four categories for entry. Sophomore, ages 7 to 10. Junior, ages 11 to 15. Senior, ages 16 to 21. And alternate assessment. Alternate assessment refers to students who are enrolled in a school and they may have cognitive disabilities and other multiple disabilities, which mean that they're not matriculating in exactly the same way. They're not progressing through school in a graded category of I'm a freshman in high school or I'm a sixth grader or whatever. And they may not even be receiving classroom grades, but they can still write reviews. They can still participate. And we wanted to make sure that there was a place where such students could enter the contest. So that's the reason for that fourth category of entry. And when you sign up and register, or when your teacher registers you, or when your parent registers you, you simply enter yourself into that category. And you determine your category according to what your birthday, how old you are on December 1st. We had to do that because we had people who were entering in one category in October and another in November. And, you know, so you want to just pick out one birth date and stick with it, one category and stick with it.
Yeah, you kind of have to do that.
Yeah, because it makes it easier for the readers and the judges and for classifying the essays. Now, that said, you may enter the contest as many times as you like. So maybe you watch a describe video in your social studies class and then another one in your biology class, and then you watch a movie with your friends on Saturday and you decide to enter three times. More power to you.
All right. Now, if you do enter three times, you should enter in the same category each time, right? I mean, you don't want to...
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. You have to be – you are a sophomore all three times or a junior all three times. And,
right.
And so that it's easy to know who you are. But,
yeah.
Yes, that's exactly what you would do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you or someone you know is writing an essay for the contest, there are – on the DCMP website, there's a link to tips for effective critique writing, essay writing, review writing, and it's really cool. And they kind of guide you in a way to do it. So if you've never done it before and want to get a little advice, it's a good place to go. You know, you're a junior film reviewer, so you might as well start like a pro.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, one other area that you mentioned to me before we started this interview, and we were talking about the prizes, and I guess last year the committee kind of pretty much dipped into their own pockets to come up with the money for the prizes?
That's right. That's right. And we wanted the prizes to be something that students and their teachers could be really proud of. And so our grand prize winner, Ms. Moreno, won an iPad, and first place winners won pretty high, significant cash amounts for gift certificates. So students who do not win grand prize but win a first or second or third in their category will receive an iTunes gift card with a certain cash amount allocated to that, and we'll determine that this year. We tend to determine that every year. Likewise, classroom teachers receive Amazon gift cards for the purchase of much-needed classroom supplies, and those of you who are teachers know that you can always use more whatever, you know, and whether it's, you know, whiteboard stuff or you know, more Braille paper, who knows what you're going to need. But anyway.
One of the things that many of our listeners may not be aware of is that often TVIs have to fund their own supplies. They don't get reimbursed by the school at all. So there's a lot of out-of-pocket expense that goes along with teaching.
Boy, that's true, isn't there? There's more out-of-pocket expense if you're a TVI than
absolutely.
Another teacher. Gosh, just remembering my own TVI, and she brought me a map of my neighborhood. She'd made the little sidewalks out of styrofoam stuff. She probably went out and bought all that.
Probably.
You know?
Probably.
Gosh,
yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yep.
So good to remember. Well, bottom line here is that the prizes, by the time we award every winner and every teacher, and also distribute recognition certificates even to contestants who do not win. By the time we get all of that done, we come out spending between $2,000 and $2,500 to fund the contest.
So this kind of sounds to me like maybe there's an opportunity for other people in other affiliates to maybe help out here?
Absolutely, absolutely. If you are from an affiliate and you would like to make a donation of, you know, $25, $50, $100, whatever it is, as an affiliate and have, you know, your name, you know, you're an affiliate sponsoring the contest, we'd be more than happy to recognize you for that and do that. If you're an individual who wants to make a donation, you can certainly do that. And there are so many ways to help out with the contest, whether you're helping publicize it or whether you're helping fund it or whether you're actually entering it. And if you are interested in making a monetary donation to the Beatty contest, you can call the ACB Minneapolis office, and the number to call is area code 612-332-3242. Ask to speak with Nancy Becker and indicate that you would like to make a donation earmarked for Beatty, and she will help you do that.
For those who don't want to register through the website or feel intimidated by the process, is there another vehicle for signing up?
They must register through the website, but
okay.
They don't have to send their essay through the website.
Okay.
They can actually send that via snail mail.
Mm-hmm.
You can send an essay hard copy, braille, print, even audio cassette. You can send it to ACB DCMP Benefits of Audio Description in Education, 1703 North Beauregard Street, so that's North, and then Beauregard Street, Suite 420, Alexandria, Alexandria, Virginia, 22311. And so if you send it to this Virginia address, it's going to be picked up by Joel Snyder. And, Steve, I see that you can, in fact, email it to him.
Okay.
You can email your contrast entry to J. Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R, at acb.org. Oh. So there is, in fact, a way to email entries, but you still need to register at the DCMP site in order to help us get a count of how many registrants and contestants we actually have, which is very important as we're figuring out if we're growing the contest and what we can do better and so on. So that's the reason for that. And once you register at that site, you start noticing all the resources that are there, and chances are you're going to stay. There's just a lot going on up at DCMP.
That's right. So is there anything else you want to cover here? Or
just that if people would like more information, and especially if you decide you're excited enough that you want to join the audio description, the Beatty contest committee, if you're a teacher, and help read entries and such, we are always looking for more teachers. You can contact me, and the reason you can contact me is that I am chair of the Benefits of Audio Description Committee, and my name is Susan Glass. And I can be reached either at my cell phone, 408-429-9567, or via email at susancglass@att.net. I'm happy to talk to anyone, happy to return calls, happy to, if you've got publicity ideas for us, however I can be helpful, I would be delighted to do that.
Well, we are certainly grateful for all of the work that you've done. This is helping everybody throughout the country, and certainly we appreciate it here in Massachusetts. And I want to thank you for being on the show tonight and for giving us all the background on this year's contest, which I think will be another exciting event for ACB.
Thank you. It was a delight to be here, and I just want to say I couldn't do this alone. I have a marvelous group of people who work with me on the committee, and then there's Jason and Joel. I mean, this happens because there's a team effort here pulling. It's never about an individual.
It never is.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit www.acbofma.org and look for the Council Connection. One of the most difficult and necessary tasks for all of us who are blind is to gather all of the resources we need in one place. Insightful Publications, a company founded by Christine Chaikin, has attempted a rather ambitious project to do just that. Here's Christine to fill us in.
Good evening, Christine. Welcome to Council Connection. Glad to have you with us. You're a first-time guest on the show, and you've got what to me is a very interesting and potentially quite useful company to talk about here. So go ahead and tell us a little about yourself and the company.
Well, first of all, Steve, thanks for having me on the show. Insightful Publications was started in December of 2009. It is a one-person operation. And to give you a little background about my company, I am a visually impaired individual solely putting these resource handbooks together myself. So my time is spent constantly trying to ensure that the books are updated as possible at time of printing. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that you will find in the resource handbook are the many organizations for the blind and visually impaired covering areas such as employment, housing, transportation, and more.
Mm-hmm.
It also includes contact information on the local, regional, and national level.
Okay.
Basically, the way the book is laid out is it lists the company name, all the contact info, the website address, and then a short description about what the company does.
Mm-hmm. And you've got books of this type for a number of different states?
Yes, the 29 state resource handbooks, and these state resource handbooks are available for purchase. The Massachusetts resource handbook is a total of 142 pages.
Mm-hmm.
The pricing information for that is individuals, 65, organizations, 110, I believe, and seniors, 45. You can also visit our website at inregular-sign.com/autopage.html, or you can send me an email at INSIGHTFULPUB@gmail.com, and I can give you all the pricing info as well as how to pay in the different payments that we accept.
Okay. Now, one question that occurs to me, and this might be putting you a little bit on the spot, is I noticed that your pricing for an organization is quite a bit more than an individual would pay.
The reason for that is because the organizations are like an entity.
Mm-hmm.
So they could probably, you know, charge them a little bit more because some of these organizations, I think, have maybe a larger funding compared to some, you know, individuals.
Uh-huh. And, of course, the organization could, I suppose, distribute the one copy they bought to several people if they so
chose to
do
it. Usually when that comes up, and they usually ask me, and I usually tell them just to share the notice with people, so that's what most of the organizations do.
Ah, okay.
Or they'll send them to my website. Because otherwise, if you start doing that, then it's like giving away, you know what I mean? If they want to order it, then they can just contact me.
Right, right, yeah. And of course, that you kind of don't, from a business point of view, you don't really want that to happen at one organization.
Right, and I always make that clear in my email, you know.
So, how often do you find that you can, from a practical point of view, how often do you find you can update these books?
You know, speaking of updates, I usually try to go back in December when I don't put a book out, and that's when I try and go do all my updates, like check all the links and stuff. And then now if I do go in a book and I add a new resource, I'll send out an email as a friendly reminder just in case people want to purchase the updated book, they can, but I'm only doing it as a friendly reminder just so they know that the book has been updated.
Right. Okay. So you don't have any kind of a subscription-based thing where
No.
So the books, of course, we know are in large print, and I think
I can do them on large print hard copy upon request.
Okay.
Most, I have it in electronic copies, so with that being said, it would be sent to them by email with an attachment, and those electronic formats are Microsoft Word,
mm-hmm.
PDF, Microsoft Word HTML, and rich text format.
Okay.
Now, they're not available in the following formats of Braille hard copy, audio, CD, or the National Library Service digital cartridge.
Yeah, okay, and I can see that kind of makes sense because from a cost point.
It would be too hard to do the audio because you're always updating that darn thing, you know.
Well, that's right. And then you'd have to get somebody to record it for you and,
right.
You know,
well,
on and on.
That's just way too much to be recorded.
Yeah, I understand. So
Let me go into actually why I started doing this. Somebody contacted me and said, okay, well, I typed the search term into Google and nothing came up.
Okay.
So then I said, well, okay, so I found that, I went into Google and I typed in a different search term and I was able to find different results. So then I said, you know what, this is when I need to start making these resource books so in that way everything is all in one place and people don't have to go through a bunch of websites trying to find what they're looking for, not to mention finding links that do not work.
Well, that's right. And sometimes in search engines will turn up dead links because people haven't updated things and, you know, all sorts of stuff like that.
Right.
So in essence, what you're doing is you're just taking all of the grunt work out of what could be a very difficult process and allowing people to get the benefits quickly and concisely.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's so much easier to do it when you have an electronic version. You just put updating whatever the date is, you know. You don't have to imagine printing all that every time you did an update. Gee.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing I want to mention is that on the electronic version, the email address and all website addresses are all linkable, so it's all screen reader friendly.
Okay.
The whole thing is in 18 point, and the font that's being used is Verdana.
Okay. So then if somebody gets the Word document, they're going to be it can be somebody with limited vision, somebody with no vision, and everybody will have the same ability to navigate the document,
and,
which is extremely useful and a very good thing.
And the other thing I did, too, was under my logo, I put a caption describing it so people would know what it looks like and, you know, what's in the left, center, middle.
Mm-hmm. But the information itself that you put into the books, of course, is mostly text based. I mean, there's no.
Oh yeah.
You don't have a lot of pictures and things like that.
Oh, no, that's the only picture I have.
Okay. Okay.
The other thing I do is people go, "Well, how do you get all your resources?" Well, I get my resources from a variation of different areas. So I listen to different podcasts. I get different publications, and then I have some contacts that I talk to, and they may have a resource for a state that I'm working on, so they'll send me some info, then I'll add that in, as that, you know, into that state as a new resource. And let me just mention that there is no fee to be included.
Okay.
If needed. So
a lot of what you do is just basically networking with people all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And,
And let me also just mention that it's all in the United States. I'm not doing resource books for the following territories of District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, Canada, and the United Kingdom.
Okay, so everything here is within the 50 United States.
Correct.
Okay. Well, you know, it strikes me that this is also a good opportunity for anybody who's got a business and or got something that they want publicized that might be useful to a lot of people to be able to get in touch with you. So should they do that through email or the phone or your website, or what's the best way?
You know, they can do it in either way. I'm always on my email all the time. So don't be surprised if someone sends me an email. And, you know, if you send somebody an email on a weekend, they probably think, well, you know, I'm not going to get nothing here, not get a response until Monday. Well, I'm on my email constantly, so don't be surprised if you get a response back from me on a weekend or a holiday.
And of course, isn't that the motto of the small business? We never sleep because we can't.
True.
We just can't.
I mean, I don't care if it's a holiday or if it's a long weekend. You never know when you're going to get a call, especially when it's telecommuting.
Well, that's right. That's right. And since I think my impression is that you're kind of doing that yourself, telecommuting and you don't have
and it's really nice. I really like it because then, let's say I'm in a different state, I can still work from that other state as long as you got the tools, like computer, internet access. You can do it from basically anywhere.
Yep. All you need is a computer and a router, and you're in business.
Now, the other thing I want to talk about is I'm sure people are going to go, how do you use all this? How do you get all this stuff, you know, all these tasks done? Well, I use a PC with a screen reader called JAWS.
Mm-hmm.
I also use the National Digital Library Service Digital Player, and I also use a Hortrack tape recorder for some of the publications that I still get on cassette.
There are still some of those left, I guess, although not many, I don't think.
Well, you know, the Braille form is still on cassette, and I believe I don't know when, but I'm hoping soon that they'll switch over to cartridge.
I wouldn't hold your breath for that, but I can tell you this. If you want to, you can get that in electronic format. You don't have to get it on cassette.
Right.
So
I usually get it on cassette in large print just because I like to follow along with the tape, and I've gotten some resources out of that too as well.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah, I like to, and that's how I get, like, my Braille monitor. You know, I pretty much use large print audio because when I read it and I listen to it, I get a better understanding of it.
Okay.
And plus, if there's any mistakes, like if something doesn't match with the audio, I'll bring it to the editor's attention just so they know.
Right, right. So it's kind of a check on them as well as a check on yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, this sounds like a very worthwhile kind of a project, and I'm glad to see that you have a book for Massachusetts. And I want to thank you for being on the show and point out to our listeners that the way you discovered us was through a podcast, which is kind of neat. Shows that our podcast is being heard at least somewhere. And
can I just mention one more thing, Steve?
Certainly, certainly.
You know, if you are in the blindness food field, I would highly recommend that you network as much as possible, and I'm sure people are going to go, who do I network with? You need to really look at networking with ECB, NFB presidents, executive directors of different blind organizations, because when you network with them, you never know. They might have a new podcast that you might not know about. They may have a new resource. So networking is a real big key when you work in this type of field.
Absolutely.
You know, the more you join different Facebook groups that have to do with the blind, you're going to find someone on there that, you know, that may need resources. That's when you tell them about your book or what you do.
That's right.
I mean, yeah, I know that's a lot of time for people, but, I mean, you really have to keep up with the stuff constantly. It's not just look at it once and you're done.
Well, once again, I want to thank you for joining us on Council Connection this month and wish you the best of luck. And hopefully this will generate some business for you.
All right. Thank you very much again, Steve.
Well, thank you, Christine. Take care. To learn more about Insightful Publications, you can phone the company at 808-747-1006. You can also email the company at insightfulpub@gmail.com. That's insightfulpub@gmail.com. Or visit them on the web at www.in-sightful, that's insightful.com. Well, that'll do it for Council Connection for the month of September. If you have questions or comments about the show, please leave us a message in the BSCB voicemail box at 617-923-4519. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, inviting you to join us again when we return with another edition of Council Connection in October.